Okay.
There's a speaker.
Oh, so you're catching the part of the speaker.
Yeah, so I just stayed in this general area.
I pick on everybody, so I'm going to have to make my way through.
See that?
Yeah. Mic check. One. One.
So, I'll see you on the 30th.
Yeah.
Next week.
I'm seeing you next week. Is it Monday or Tuesday?
Oh, one.
Tuesday, I think.
Okay. Yeah, and then after that. Again.
Yeah, in July.
It's coming. Okay. You going to mic check? Do you want a mic check, Ray, or is he? Okay, we'll get started on our last session before lunch. Please welcome Ray Dietrich. Ray. I've got too much cold medicine in me. Hold me up. Ray is a Law Enforcement Advanced DWI Reporting System. That's what LEADRS stands for. Say that three times fast.
Leaders.
Okay. Project coordinator for the Texas Municipal Police Association. He also acts as a liaison between the Texas Department of Transportation and many other law enforcement agencies in the state with traffic enforcement grants. He helps us out quite a bit here at the center. Ray started his law enforcement career in 2001. He was a constable's deputy and then municipal court officer. Then went with Hunt, that was in Hunt County. Ray is an experienced TCLOS and defense tactics instructor. He holds a certified hostage negotiator. I can't say this one time slowly. Yes.
Lots of big
there
words.
There are a lot of letters, a lot of acronyms, and Ray is a very experienced officer, and we enjoy being able to utilize him as a resource. Please welcome Ray Dietrich.
Good morning. I'm excited because it's almost lunchtime. Yeah. So I will keep you awake today, I promise. We're going to talk about courthouse security, so I get to be the doom and gloom guy. So before we get started, I will introduce myself. My name is Ray Dietrich. I work for the Texas Municipal Police Association. I'm also a police officer. I have worked as a warrant officer, so I have officed with the courts. I've gone out and served warrants. I have bailiffed, a jack of all trades, a master at none. But I have a really good comprehension of court security and how it applies to each and every one of you. And it's all different for everybody. Some of you work for agencies that have really great budgets, although it seems like everybody's budget's being cut right now. I have dealt with court security for a court staffer that was housed out of an old snow cone stand, I believe. So if you think you have it bad, try being holding court and dealing with offenders in an old snow cone stand where there's only one door in and out. I do handle TxDOT grants, assist TxDOT with everything from, now don't throw things at me when I tell you this, but like click it or ticket, right? The stuff that really makes your job a lot more difficult in several ways. In addition, the PINE tables out there that you guys have picked up some of the freebies, Israel has been working that. Israel and I work together, and so he handles this part of the state. I actually live out of outside of Rockwall, so I'm not out of Austin. So we're going to talk a little about courthouse security and some of the advances in courthouse security. And this is really kind of a fun topic because some of the best changes in courthouse security have nothing to do with panic buttons, although those are a great thing and we're going to talk about them. And it has nothing necessarily to do with building layout, because a lot of times we just don't have any decision-making ability when it comes to the building layout. You show up for work and the building's there and it's laid out the way it's laid out. Keep in mind that courthouse security does fall to you as well. But we have to be aware of each individual situation. Your court security setup is not going to be the same as mine. So a lot of things that we're going to talk about today are kind of generalized in nature, but you should be able to apply them when you take it back to your courts. the fun part, though, is that really for us in courthouse security, it's all about dealing with our customer, right? And dealing with the offenders that come in that are mad or have questions or unsure. So really what we try to do in this is I try to really bring the information to you is how you can handle it. I mean, you can't affect you can ask for a panic button, and you all should have them. If you don't, you should be writing memos until you get them. But really what it comes down to is with courthouse security, you in this room are the first line of defense. So that being said, let me see if I can scare you real bad while I'm here. Like I said, I'm the kind of doom and gloom guy. So as we go through when we talk about courthouse security, we need to look at some of the things for this next hour that we're going to talk about. Why is it so important? Obviously, courthouse security is important. We can see definite issues in the court system. Now, luckily, we're dealing mostly with Class Cs, right? But we'll talk about that. The people that come in to pay your Class C tickets, anybody ever run those folks? You ever know who the people you're dealing with are? Do you know, I get a yes. How many of those that come to your court, actually there's probably quite a few that have felonies, right? Yeah. And so you're dealing with the unknown. Because most people, and especially at the city level, when you start talking about city managers or people who make decisions, they're very narrow-minded about the people that we're dealing with. Well, it's just a traffic ticket. Or it's just a code violation. Well, that can really get some people flowing, especially when you start talking about the kind of fines that come with that. And so that definitely applies when we're dealing with these folks to court security. We'll talk about how to explain and cope with different behaviors. We're going to understand the role of the first responder. And make no mistake, you are the first responder. Does anybody know what the average call-out time for a SWAT department is if you have a SWAT department? Okay, let's back up and say, what's the average response time for your standard patrol officer? 2 seconds if you've got one right in your, right, if they're right across the way, absolutely. 10 to 15 minutes? That's right. So it all varies. The generalized average response time of a patrol officer is about 5 to 7 minutes. Now, lots can go wrong in 5 to 7 minutes. The average call-out time for a SWAT deployment in a negotiation or a crisis is about 45 minutes. Now, don't be surprised about that because SWAT doesn't go anywhere unless they have a plan. And you got to get all those people together and suited up, and they got to get their plan. But make no mistake, you are the first responder in that situation. What are the duties of your court officers? Who should implement court security? Who here has, if you've got like a marshal in your office or like you're right next to the PD, so it's probably a little easier. Anybody have staff, law enforcement staff in their office? That's a real blessing. I mean, officer presence alone can really knock down some of the issues. People tend to be less rude when an officer is around. And then we'll talk a little bit about how we'll fund court security. I mean, it's no secret. We're going to kind of throw that out there because we've got to make sure everybody knows that it can be funded. So let's talk about who comes to court. This really is something that I like because we're all people person. You know, if you're in this job and you deal with offenders, because I'm a cop, so everybody to me is an offender, right? A defendant. See, and that's just... No, they're not defendants. They're offenders. They're not defendants. That's the cop coming out in me, right? So let's talk about who comes to court. Now, if you took this job thinking you weren't going to have any type of engagement with these type of people, then you obviously figured out really fast and that you're really wrong. And so we are all people person in this room. You can judge somebody and tell how they're going to be probably within the first 10 or 15 seconds and how the encounter is going to go. But we need to look at the different type of people that actually come into your court. So I get out there, I'm going to write a half a dozen tickets, and I've made a half a dozen people mad. But guess what? When I cut them loose and turn my lights off and drive around to another block to write another ticket, guess where they're going to come to upset? You guys. You guys are really the first line of, for the majority of time, for those offenders to really express their frustration, their anger. So we have the upset. They had to take time off from work. Do you realize what this ticket is costing me? And they're not just talking about the fine, although that's oftentimes an issue, right? May have to pay a fine that they can't afford. That typically becomes even more evident as the economy. You know, what am I supposed to do? It's either pay the ticket or buy my baby milk. Well, that's a hard choice, right? And they've got to come in and then really be upset. Maybe they feel like they didn't do anything at all. Or you have confused. Now, I'll tell you what, folks, I'll take this coming into my office any day of the week, right? First-time offenders, not sure. Oh, I got this ticket. The ones I really like are the ones that I write, and they come right to you like 20 minutes later, I got this ticket, I want to pay it so I don't get a warrant, right? I mean, they're there within like, you don't even have a copy of the ticket, and you're like, I don't have the ticket yet. Can't you use mine? No. I just don't want a warrant. Those are the kind I like. Those are, you know, those aren't bad. But the confused is not bad. First-time offenders, slow-moving lines, they don't understand the whole process. I welcome these. These are fairly easy. Oftentimes what I try to remind the classroom when we're dealing with these folks is that they don't understand the process, so they're fairly typically easy to work with. However, we often find ourselves frustrated because we know the process. I mean, we have dreams about the process, and we know where we're going. Absolutely. And so one of the things to remember about these folks is keep in mind this, is that to them, they're the only confused person in the room when you've already dealt with 10 people just like them. You know. But really, if you're going to pick and choose the kind of person that comes in, this is not bad. You know, this is kind of a plus. Right. Well, and that's a whole other issue, right? When you have, and trust me, in law enforcement we deal with that. I don't know that I would say a majority of the time, but there's oftentimes, what she made the comment is, well, you know, and then all of a sudden. And it's even worse when it's a college-age student because they're an adult. Hello, you've sent them off into the world, and mom and dad are calling on the phone trying to figure out what's going on. You know, if they're 16 and even 17, even though by our law, 17, they get to go to big boy or big girl jail, you know, if they mess up or if they get a ticket, they need to handle it themselves. But, that can be very frustrating when you're dealing with those parents because there's no telling what the child has told those, you know, parent, those cops are out to get me, you know? Yeah, like I don't have better things to do than, yeah, I don't really, actually. I work in a college town. I like to pick on college kids. So, absolutely. Then we have the concerned, and they come in, and really this is the folks that want to come in and make sure that they don't get a warrant. It's not so much. They're concerned, and they're concerned about the fine amount, but it's not so much that they can't pay. It's just they realize that, you know, $150 is a lot of money. Insurance costs, they don't want their insurance to be raised, so they want the deal of the century, you know. Lots and lots of deals, lots and deals. And they're also concerned about jail time. I like these folks that they come in and they pay. And they don't really want an issue. Most of the time they know they're busted. You know, hey, you got me. So this, you know, these aren't bad folks either. So fed up. Now I'll tell you this right now. This is probably to me one of the most dangerous of the groups that we deal with. I'll tell you a little story as this relates. In 2005, while I was working as a warrant officer, our code enforcement officer went to a residence, actually one of my neighbors, across the catty corner neighbor, and went to write a public nuisance ticket. Now, they had been dealing with this family for over the course of years, sending letters, please clean up your porch area, you know, it's just a disaster. So the code enforcement officer went in, went over to the location, started to write a ticket, got into a little bit of a confrontation with the owners, moved his vehicle away from the house, about a house and a half down, to which the 22-year-old son went in, grabbed a 45 caliber extended round magazine, and shot my friend seven times on the run for writing a ticket. Now, I say that because although your guys are not out in the field, the family felt like this, that the city got what they got coming because the city was messing with them. And they were fed up because no one cared, no one listened to why their porch was all cluttered. They felt like they were being picked on. But can you imagine had that code enforcement officer wrote that ticket, gave that ticket out, and now that offender shows up in your courtroom and he feels like that? Because he doesn't care that, I mean, you're just doing your job, right? But you are part of the city, right? And you are part of the people that tell them what the fines are, what the financial punishment, what happens if you don't pay the ticket, you know? And in addition, those are those type of tickets that can run $2,000, you know, $1,500, $1,000 tickets. So these are the kind of people, in addition, that come to your court. We need, as people person, to be able to recognize these type of folks. You need to be able to recognize all the type of folks, but this could easily be one of the more serious type of people. When you hear that type of talk coming out, that the city is just picking on me, the city, and you get that a lot with code enforcement, I'm sure. I mean, if you really, not so many, so much tickets for speeding as you do in court, code enforcement, we need to be very careful. And we need a plan when we know that these folks are coming in to have one of your officers just happen to stop by for coffee, right? Or just happen to stop by to talk to you when you know that this person's coming in. We're looking for presence of people that will calm a situation. A lot of times you're going to be it, but you need to be able to... Is that turned well enough that everybody can see? I just noticed it was a little off. Okay. Oh, is that what it was? From all the pool? I know. How tough is it to be sitting in class when you've got a blue, sparkly pool? All right. Then we have the folks that come in and look for and expecting justice, right? I want my jury trial. I want it today. That cop wrote me a ticket. I did not have it coming. They do expect you to be professional. They expect something to happen today. And oftentimes it's not that way. Once again, it's just it's another one of those type of personalities that come into court. We have unresolved issues. I like to call them our revolving doors. A lot of times we see that with health and safety issues, municipal ordinances. Oftentimes you'll see, everybody here knows right now, in fact, I'm going to call on one of you. The person that always is in jail about every 30 days because of the ticket they didn't pay, I'm going to ask you because you're laughing. What's the, not their full name, just what's their first name? Aaron, there we go. What's your person's first name? Jim. So we all have them. Those revolving doors that always come in, and you see them. And they're what I consider an unresolved issue. Although they're not typically a court security risk in general, we know them pretty well. They're almost like family. You expect to see them show up at Thanksgiving. You deal with them all the time. So, in addition, for some of you larger agencies that are here and cities that are here, you're going to have gang members come into your court. Make no mistake that this is something that you have to address. And even some of the smaller departments, Little Bitty Commerce, Texas, where I'm a police officer at, do we have gangs? Not really, because nobody's smart enough to get organized, right? Which is a real plus to us. I mean, that's really the honest truth. If they ever got organized, we'd probably be in trouble. But they come in ones or twos or threes. Now, when we start talking about gang members, what I highly suggest to you is this. Typically, when you have a gang member come in and he's by himself, they're very compliant. They typically don't cause any problems. It's when they come in with friends. Because now he has to showboat or show his friends how tough he is, and he doesn't really care about this ticket. Make no mistake, you are in charge of your courtroom. You are in charge of that office. And if you want that other suspect, see, it's old cop school. If you want that other person to leave, you ask them to leave. You are in charge of your office. And keep that in mind as we talk about this. Some of you don't have a full-time judge. Some of you, you're it. You're the only person in your courtroom. Judge comes in once a week or once a month or twice a month, and you are the person there, which makes you the person in charge. You have to keep that in mind. You are the controlling factor in that office. You have some responsibility because of that, but in addition, you have the type of authority that gets to tell that gang, sorry, you need just to wait outside. Well, I'm with my friend. Sorry, you need to wait outside. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not uncustomer friendly. Although I don't know that we need to worry about being super customer friendly to that type of individual that comes into your court looking to cause tension. But keep that in mind. If you can single out those gang members and get them in front of you on a one-on-one basis, you will find that that type of interaction will go a lot smoother. It's also a lot safer for you, because he doesn't have to show off in front of his friends. You just don't want them that bravado building up. And so what we highly suggest is that you take control of your office, and there's nothing that says you can't ask them to step out. And you can easily justify that if anybody was to come to you and ask. So, and then you have convicted felons. Make no mistake, convicted felons get tickets. They do. They like to speed a lot. I don't know what it is. Trying to get away, I guess. And they don't like to pay those fines. But you need to keep in mind, even though that you're being professional when you're dealing with these folks, you need to keep in the back of your mind the type of person that you could be dealing with. It's very easy for you to know. And especially if it's going to be a convicted felon, a lot of times you'll see those folks tend to be a lot of the folks that are cycling through a lot. So you'll see them every 30 or 45 days as they get picked up for warrants, or they want to come and get in. Absolutely. Yes, she's referring, what she said is you often see that because the attitude that they walk in with. Well, first of all, make no mistake, they just don't care.
Well, and that's part of it, but it's like, this is no big deal, I've done this before, and I don't care what you do with me.
Right, whatever.
But
you need to keep that in mind that you are dealing with them. And you can definitely tell a difference in that type of attitude with somebody that's coming in that has been in the system, that is very familiar with how the system works. Typically what I find with that is that they really have an attitude, or they're very yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am.
Way
one way or way the other. I would agree with that assessment of that. Oftentimes when we make stops on people that are felons, I'll know to ask for their felon ID card or their jail card just by the way they're talking to me. I mean, they straighten up, they keep their hands to their side, and they're yes sir, no sir, yes sir, nodding, and not actually looking at you that much, but absolutely. And that's what we kind of refer to, is that you will get, I mean, you're reading those type of people. They're coming into your office and you're reading it, and you're adjusting accordingly as you're dealing with them. So when we talk about the type of people that come in, we need to look at the type of issues that come to the courthouse. Now, the great news is that if you really want to start looking about for issues that have happened at the municipal court level, you really got to search. I mean, it's not a lot of time. People just don't often come in and start shooting up the place. I mean, that's the good news. You know, to find type of issues that happen on courthouses, it really does take a little bit. But you have to keep in mind that we talk about these headlines because I wanted to get it in your head that if you don't have a court security plan, if you're not really paying attention to the people that are coming to your court, you need to be. I mean, nothing here that I'm going to tell you today is going to be rocket science. You're not going to go, oh my gosh, things have changed for me. I always consider this class as it is, is a good reminder, something that you may have forgotten, something that you knew in the back of your head, but something you need to really take seriously. Texas courthouse shooting, anybody from the Tyler area? Nobody? It's interesting, I've had some court staff that were around when this happened and listening to their, listening to them talk about it. It was just absolutely terrifying. Man opens fire in a historical town, came well armed and well prepared. Some of you are probably very familiar with this. He shot up a courthouse. It was a domestic issue. Shot several officers and actually had to be chased down and killed. But it was at a Texas courthouse. In Atlanta, man opened fire at the Fulton County courthouse, killing judges, sheriffs, deputy, court reporter, and wounding another deputy. So you really do need to be aware of that. Now, I'm not suggesting that you like pack heat in the office. You can't go back and say, Dietrich says I need to get a gun, right? Or anybody carry a taser, have a taser in there? Oh, that, yeah, oh, ride the white lightning. That'll get somebody's attention real fast. Now, I'm not suggesting that you get a taser either, although they really are fun. You only have to light up one or two people before the word gets out in your city that you don't put up with that. You don't play that in the courthouse, in the courtroom. That's right. She'll mace you, man. She'll mace you. That'll be all over town. So we look at these headlines, and, you know, courtroom shooting in Fort Worth. Here is a Harris County report where they had a guy that came in with a gun and pointed a gun at some folks. And luckily, one of the judges was armed, which is always great. I don't mind armed judges. However, something to point out is that EMS couldn't even show up to help the people that needed help because they had to make sure the situation was clear, which is one of the reasons why you guys need the court security plan. And don't mistake that just because everybody's going to, I mean, like for the next week when you get back here and be like, is he coming at me? I mean, I don't want you to be that way. That needs to be for fire, for, you know, any type of emergency. Unfortunately, this is one of those that you have to plan for. So, I really like the exciting stuff. All right. Oh, it was just a report. Were you trying to read it? All right. So what all does this mean? Well, that means that we need to get you kind of a starter course on what you already know. I mean, you already know what you deal with these folks. You know how to defuse a mad person, right? It's not get the hell out. That, by the way, that's not the right answer, right? I asked one class, I said, who here has a court security plan? Come on, one, anybody else? Court security plan? I asked that question, and the lady raised her hand. I said, what's your court security plan? She says, run like hell. Okay, sometimes that's the great court security plan. But we need to make, and that sometimes is the best court security plan. However, I will throw this out to you as we talk about court security plan. What happens if it's a trial day and you've got jurors? Because, I mean, you're going to do some jury trials, right? I submit to you that as a staff of the court that you have a moral obligation to make sure that those people are kept safe. You have a moral obligation to make sure the people that are waiting in line to talk to you about their next tickets are kept safe. You obviously have an obligation to yourself and your family to make sure that you make it home at the end of the day, right? Which is important. So you have a lot of things to kind of figure out when you're talking about court security. Sometimes the run like hell plan is the best plan. Sometimes it's not going to be an option. So if you're going to find out people that are stressed out, really this is it, right? Because they're not, you come in and they don't come in always, well, really never for the best of reasons, right? They've had an encounter with a law enforcement officer, and now they've got to go through the process, which is just not a fun type of, unless they meet me, and then I'm pretty fun on the road, too, even when I give them my tickets. But so they're going to be stressed out. So how do we as security personnel, because you have to think of yourself that way, How do you identify them? I mean, really, is there a good, solid way to identify them? Sometimes body language. Absolutely. Which kind of really hits our point is there's no proven formula to achieve identification. It takes interaction. Now, I'm not a big judge of a book by its cover, although you can definitely tell a lot. And you said sometimes, listen, I've stopped some bikers that I was like, I'm going to need, you know, I'm about to radio back up, and I haven't even got him off his bike yet just because he looks like he can whoop me and about six other people that I can get to my location. Yeah, you know, and it turns out to be the nicest guy, or turns out to be an off-duty cop, something like that. Or, you know what I'm saying? So you really can't judge a book by its cover, but sometimes you need to. Sometimes you need to be aware of the people that come in. They're going to give you telltale signs. So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of talk about, yeah, there's no proven formula, but within 2 or 3 minutes, Casey, you should definitely know the type of person you're going to be dealing with. You're going to get that feedback. First of all, your intuition of the situation is going to probably be accurate about 90% of the time. Absolutely. That's right. And you're trying to establish, remember that when those people come in, you're establishing the hierarchy when they come in. Typically they should be, and don't read into this, they should be a little can't even talk. They should have a subordinate role to you just because they're coming in to take care of business. How many of you sit at a desk where somebody, they can come right into your court and engage you right there and talk to you right there? Right? Okay. So if I come in, and this is why we acknowledge them and we sure want to ask them to have a seat, but if I come in and tell you, now you're sitting at your desk and I say, you know what, that cop, he just gave me a ticket and I'm pretty pissed about it. Perfect, right? Because who's in charge when I'm standing over her at her desk? I am, right? You stand up. That's right. You want to take those situations under your control. You want to engage. You want to engage those people where you have the control of the situation. And if you find that you're not going to have control of that situation, you've got to get somebody else in there to assist you. I mean, don't go, I'm dialing 911, but, right? You hit the panic button 4 times and 9 guys come in like this. I just wanted to pay a ticket, you know? I'm a little upset. It's going to be normal for somebody to be upset. I mean, that's totally normal. Probably everybody here has gotten a ticket or two, right? I know how I felt when I got my ticket. I was mad as fire. Okay, it's just an emotional feeling. When I show up to take care of it, it rekindles those feelings. So we have to know in advance. You can't expect somebody to come in and say, gosh, I'm so glad I got this ticket. Thank you for taking my money. Woo! You know? But you... That was probably my mom, so yeah. But what you have to do is you have to remember they are going to come into your court and they are going to be... They're going to be a little upset. So it's okay. We're going to let them vent a little bit. But we need to, you know, to identify them if they're going to be a problem. Okay? Courts, you've got to move from a traditional reactive security mode to a proactive mode. And we'll kind of talk about that when it comes time to buildings, technology that can assist you. So when we handling difficult people, and you've got multiple different kinds of difficult people, I want to give you some of the six principles for effective communication. Now, this is not, we're not going to hold hands and sing kumbaya, because I'm really not into that. But let me tell you this, these six effective principles are the exact same principles that I use as a hostage negotiator. I mean, so, and the funny part is that when I went to this class, man, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to go be a hostage. They're going to teach me, you know, too many movies is what I saw. You know, send in the tank, you know, that kind of stuff. But what I found was is it's a lot of it's common sense that we need to put into play. And it especially helps if you're dealing with somebody who's high stress, has a problem, has an issue, and is wanting to escalate the issue further than what you want to escalate. Right? I mean, they're going to come in upset. We're okay with that. We can deal with it. We can talk with them. When they continue to try to escalating issues, then we have to step in. So we're going to talk first about we are going to remain calm when you start dealing with people that are causing issues in your court. All right? Because it doesn't help when you get back in their face and you go, you better sit down or I'm going to call the police and they're going to come and arrest you and throw you on that ground. And then I'm going to take my taser out and tase you. Okay? That's going to make them, I mean, you're aggravating the situation. So we want to stay calm. We want to, in addition, we want to remove any audience that we have. Remember I talked that you had a moral obligation, and you really do. I mean, understand that. You are officers of the court, and you have a moral obligation to make sure that any other citizen in your court, some of you are supervisors that have staff, you have a moral obligation to keep those staffers safe. And so anytime that we can remove the audience, we want to remove the audience. Now, typically, remove the audience is going to fall into play if you've got jurors or you've got other people, and you may just have to ask them to step outside. I don't suggest you asking other staff members to step outside so you're on a one-on-one basis. I mean, the point that it gets to that, you need to have red lights coming towards your building. So we don't want to necessarily engage them alone. There's definitely safety in numbers as a whole, but when we remove the audience, we're removing citizens, that type of stuff, you know. So we keep it simple. We listen to what they want. They want something. Typically, it's to dismiss the ticket. Obviously, that's not within our powers and authorities, but hell, they don't know that. If it gets them out of my office and they're causing a problem, I can do whatever I need to do at that moment to defuse the situation. That doesn't, because I tell you that I'm going to go ahead and get that ticket dismissed because you're yelling and screaming, and I know that the nearest officer is like 3 or 4 minutes away, and I'm really uncomfortable with what this is. You know, sometimes it's okay to say what you need to say to get them out of your face, right? I mean, that's under duress anyway, so it doesn't count. All right? Do I seem like the doom and gloom guy, by the way? I told you, right? Anybody really, really new, by the way? I mean, like brand new into this line of work? I hope not either. I've scared off a couple of them in a few other classes. Oh, my gosh. So then we're going to watch our body language. We're going to be very open to what they're saying, even if we're going, they are so full of it. This is never going to, you know, they're never going to get what they want. But I'm going to watch my body language. It's not going to be this. You know, if I can invite them, you know, please have a seat. Even if they're really mad, you know, even just please have a seat makes a big difference because that gets somebody into a comfort level. And it also gets them from being superior position over you, which is not a good position for them to be. We're going to use silence because we're going to listen to what they have to say. They're going to be voicing. They're going to be angry. And they're going to have something to say. And if we can listen to what they're looking for, that can really help us in the long run determine how to help this person. I mean, these techniques aren't necessarily going to help you. Well, they will help you if you had a crisis situation. But this is great techniques for just the person that's just flipping out mad. They're just mad. And they know they're not even mad at you. They're just mad. So we're going to give them a chance. We're going to use our silence. We're going to listen to what they're looking for. Because it really is easy for us, especially in our nature, because we deal with how many people you have come through your court? In a day. Oh, you're out of Garland. Oh, gosh, you got hundreds, right? Hundreds. Well, you know what? Even when they come to the window to pay. You know, they can be mad. They can be... Now, you have a luxury where you have officers and you have marshals and you have some luxury, but you're still dealing with these folks. They still... Yes, I know. I know. You know why they don't? Because you have good courtroom security. Okay? So let me ask.
Speaking of that, if you're a very small community,
mm-hmm.
we contract with the county
mm-hmm.
for sheriff services.
Yes.
We have no officers, no anything. And the way the people are getting at guns and ammunition these days, that kind of concerns us a bit.
Well, you're in a rural area, so you understand that everybody's got a gun. I mean, really, we're in a rural commerce. You know, everybody you dealt with had a rifle in the car or a shotgun. Yeah. So. That's true. Amen to that. But we'll kind of talk about that when we start talking a little bit about security for the building. But we can touch on that after, because if you have some concerns about that, there's some specific stuff that you can do. We'll talk about it. But like I said, I don't really. We're going to touch on the building security and the technology, but really what I want you guys to do is you're the person in power. So really that's what I need to do is I need to make you feel confident. I can do this stuff. I mean, have I said anything up there, or is there anything on that list that you can't do? I mean, you should be able to do it. You work in a job where you deal with angry people. So why not have the best tools to deal with those? So we'll talk about the guns and stuff. And then we use effective questioning. We listen to what they're really saying, and then we question to try to get the best answer out of them for the situation. I mean, that sounds pretty generic, but it really is true. You know, if somebody comes in and they're mad and you see them like two or three times a week and it's all getting written from the same officer, the question may need to be, as they're coming in and venting, well, I mean, I notice that all 9 of your tickets are from Officer Dietrich. You know, what's going on with that? They already know that, but you're acknowledging a concern of theirs, and that may help alleviate the situation. I am picking on that person. Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't have to worry about it. They got to come to your court. I get to drive off, right? So we have to know when, what, and how to communicate. And really for that, for you, for me, that's keeping it really calm. See, when you've got somebody yelling at you, the best thing to do is really talk in a nice, soft voice, because.
And be respectful.
Well, and be respectful. But here's the funny part is, a person can only yell for so long, unless they're really crazy. Okay, now that's a whole other story, right? And I don't mean like, you know, our definition. I mean like certifiable crazy. Those people can stay angry for a long time, but you cannot stay angry and yell for an extended period of time. Now, the person getting yelled at may feel like it's an extended period of time, but the fact is you can only outburst anger for about 2 to 4 minutes. Your body doesn't allow it really that much. I mean, your body's not designed for that type of energy release for long periods of time. So we have to know when, what, and how to communicate. We respond to people. We don't react. All right? I thought she did great. Yes. I was coming to pick on you anyway, so.
Well, what if you're dealing with, and I have one that comes in pretty regularly.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not only the court clerk, but I'm the city administrator. So, like, all the complaints that come across for officers, you know, they come,
mm-hmm.
they file their complaints.
That's a very interesting position to be in.
So, but he's an MHMR patient. So, you can't, he could yell all day long. If he threatened to, you know, come in and shoot us all up and catch us on the way home, and, you know, they've asked.
Absolutely, every time you should be.
Then if you file a charge, that just makes that person
worse. So, if it's a mental patient, they're not going to, absolutely, absolutely. You need some type of record, because ultimately what's going to happen is that person's probably going to snap at some point. Here we go, get to be the doom and gloom guy again, right? And if that person snaps, let's just hope they don't snap at the city, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's hope it doesn't happen at the court. But the fact is that you need to have some documentation, because ultimately something's going to happen in that. Because if he's having those type of issues with you, he's having them at other places as well. So at some point in time, somebody's going to have had enough. And in your position, you should be the person that says, we've had enough of this. Okay? You're in a great position to set the standard right then and there. Here's how we're going to do things. Now, you don't have to like it, but this is how it's going to be. I mean, this is one of those times that great customer service is not going to apply because that person's not in the right amount of thinking. Absolutely. When that person comes in, an officer needs to be called immediately. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a panic button?
No.
You need
no.
one.
No.
Yeah. You need...
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, now that's... Okay. That's exactly right. And let's address that. She calls for dispatch assistance, right? And, of course, now you get in... You got to deal with a dispatcher who wants every little piece of information. So, rightfully so, so she can tell her officers what they're coming to. But what you need to do is you need to have a sit-down talk with the chief and say, listen, I don't call all the time. You know, I've called twice in a year. And both times I needed you guys there. Okay? However, they can ask that as a yes or no question. If that's going to be necessary. But that's something where she would want to get, and you in that situation, you'd want to get with the chief and go, look, I'm not hitting my panic button six times a day. You know? When those people come in, you need to have that kind of good communication with your police department because that's significant. That's when you stand up, you open the door, and you move the meeting to the outside. You're in a closed confined area with some... So? Tasing. I'll get you the name of a man. No, I'm not going there. I'm not going to tell you to knife somebody too. Oh, my gosh. Can you hear the civil liabilities with that? Dietrich, just jab them a couple of times now. Yeah. But you should probably carry some mace. I would carry OC spray. Mace, by the way, is not good. OC spray is the way you want to go, right? You understand there's a difference between the two? All right. How are we doing on time, by the way, back there? 10 minutes. All right. So we're going to respond to people. We're never going to react. To react is going, see, what had happened, you're a great example, what had happened if you had really reacted to that man versus you responded. You responded by picking up, you had some logistical area issues like you should have told the dispatcher shut the hell up and get an officer over there, right? I mean, this is not the time to play those games. She's doing her job, but what she needs to understand is that you don't call all the time, and when you call, you need an officer. She can ask you some of the questions. So it can be, you know, she'll be asked, is there a gun involved? So you're going to do that. You're buying time. And what you do is you tell that crazy guy, hang on for just one second. Smile at him, hang on. Because now you've acknowledged him, and he may know who you're calling anyway. But, yeah. And that may have been a great way to go for that. But, you really need to watch those type of people. Mentals, there's just no rules for mentals. I mean, you have to understand that. When you're dealing with the mental patients, there are no rules. I can show you, I took a mental guy to the hospital one day to have him evaluated. He knew who I was when I set him down in the lobby. When I went in to talk to the doctor and came back out, the guy didn't know who I was and the fight was on. And so, I mean, there's just no rule. Mental patients are very hard to deal with. You really have to be careful with those folks. So, all right. So when you are responding and versus reacting, you are the person in control. Once again, what's my theme? Stay in control. It's your office. You are the person in charge. Common sense stuff. We are oftentimes so hammered by city administrators about customer service, customer service, customer service. And the bigger departments, bigger cities, you really get it hammered, right? But customer service only takes you so far when you're dealing with somebody mad. We want to be polite, we want to be professional, but we still want to be the person in control. Right. You know how you get that started? Let me tell you how to get that ball rolling. It needs to go in a memo form, okay, to your supervisor, and you need to clarify and articulate the reason why you think you need it. So, when you start putting things in memo, by the way, There's a written record. And you have civil liabilities for cities. Because let's be honest, that's what they're concerned. You know, a city administrator is going to look budget versus liability, right? I mean, that's their job. I mean, it's not a fault of theirs, but really that's their job. Budget versus liability. When you start putting things in memo form, there starts to be a record, and then things will start happening for you.
We have a glass, a proof glass, and our city manager wants to take it out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I would say that would be a foolish thing. Yeah, there definitely needs to be a course for city managers or city administrators that talk about customer friendly versus, because they go to classes where they talk about customer friendly, and those people are done by people who don't do anything but customer service. For them, they don't ever factor in the problem people, right? Or your city manager may think, well, if we take it out, the cops are like 2 minutes away. My God, you know what can happen in 2 minutes? Yeah. There you go. You need to call and have him at least talked to. A filled interrogation card. Interrogation, well, that's a filled interview card needs to be put out on that type of person. You have to take those serious, see? You have to take those type of people serious. Even though they may be venting, you know, you have to take those type of... All right, so we're going to have to rush to the rest of this because we've had some good talking. But, all right, so appearance, we look at that. We watch for body language. I mean, we're going to just touch on this quick because we know this. We watch that body language, right? You can tell I'm a real reserved person that doesn't like crowds just by my body language, right? She's off. All right, so we want to watch for that. We're watching for the telltale signs. And let's talk about this real quick. We talked about this earlier. You are the true first responder. And the first 15 to 45 minutes of any type of incident is going to be critical. Now, we're talking about incidents that really go to critical. We're not talking about the average mad person that you're dealing with. So you use these skills every day. And what you have to remember is, if the time comes to where the situation goes critical, you still are going to use those same set of skills. You're going to be scared when it's going on, but you use those same set of skills. So you practice them, you remember them now, so when it's not gloom and doom, you'll be able to draw upon those and be successful. Because remember, we all want to go home at the end of the day. All right. When we do the assessment, we need to look at what's happening, why is it happening, and we need to stop and ensure our own safety. Sometimes a run like hell plan is the best. And honestly, if you can get out and you don't have those other people that you're having to worry about, that's okay. It's time to get out. I'm coming as fast as I can to the problem. I want you to exit the problem as fast as you can. Sometimes you're not going to be in a position to do that. You sure weren't in the position when he came in and shut your door. So what? We change our plan up a little bit. We draw upon what we know, how we handle this person to be effective until backup can arrive, right? And you're here, so it was obviously successful. So, but we want to assess the situation. Why? What is happening? Why is it happening? And stop and ensure your own safety. Keep that in mind. We're just looking at the overall picture. Initial actions, we have to look at can we contain the situation? Do we evacuate? This is basic. I'm not going to come in and go, this is how you need to do it, and this is how you need to do it. I want you to be familiar with this so when you go back and you talk to the people in charge and say, we really need a security plan. Even if it's the most basic security plan, you can tell them, these are some of the things that we need to look for. We need to tailor this to the fact that I'm the only one here and I don't have an emergency button. I may need an old police radio in my office instead. I swear that I will never call unless I really need it. Okay? But you need to look at those type of things. All right? Typically, your municipal court security has been assigned to the administrator or judges. You have direct and indirect. Direct is going to be positions as far as marshals, security goes. Obviously, we don't have any control of that. That's a budget issue, right? So, in security, having officers, who said they contracted with the county? Lucas, you contract with the county. You may tell them, look, we contract with you on court days from 2 to 4. We want a deputy around. Yeah. So, because they're smart. They understand court security. You go where there's a potential problem. So, physical security, evacuations plans for your facility. What do you do in the course of bomb threats? You have a hostage plan, emergency medical plan. Once again, you may never come into any of those, but you may come into one or two. We have to be just prepared. It's just about being prepared. And incident reports. That needs to be an incident report. That needs to be a report every time he makes a threat. The truth is he's probably not in his right mind, but we need to document that somewhere. The guy I fought, no charges. Why? Because he wasn't in his right mind. That guy wasn't trying to hurt me. He didn't know what was going on. So, sure it is. But you know what? You cannot be afraid. Okay? I'm not going to take any action because it may make him more mad. But he's still coming into your office mad. So we're going to set the tone with him. We're going to let him know what works and doesn't work when you're dealing with this. So, also you could consider courtroom searches. This is a little difficult for you smaller agencies, but keep in mind this. Lucas, there's nothing that says the deputy can't search every bag that comes through. Okay? Some of you larger departments that have metal detectors, I don't suggest those for small departments. You know why? They're labor intensive. You need 3 officers to work a metal detector successfully. Okay, we see sometimes one, but that's not really cutting the mustard. I mean, that's really not how they're designed to be ran. So, but you have all these different types of court security issues that go in your court security manager. How do you handle prisoner control? Hopefully you're not getting a lot of prisoners coming into your court. Some of you that are court of records, however, may. All right? So, who should help create this manual very quickly? All of these folks. You should. You're the folks, I mean, you should have some input. You're not going to be the deciding factor. But if you work in the office every day, you know the quirks about the office. You know the layout of the place. You know the folks that come in. You know where the best spots for the panic alarm would be, right? It doesn't do you any good if it's way over there with the big sign that says panic button, right? Because they tackle you when you try to go run for it. All right. Securing the court building very quickly. We're just going to talk about this. You have some different areas. We're just about done. You're going to have to look at outside security, inside security. You're going to have weapon screening. Really what I'm going to tell you, at your level, this really needs to be decided by a court administrator in conjunction with a law enforcement officer. All right? Let the officers who are trained in this, who have an expertise in security, assist you with this type of stuff. Really, when you go back and you're going to talk about this, and somebody's judge may actually go, you know what, that's probably a really good idea. That's something we've been needing to take care of. What do you suggest? Right? Well, we're going to say, well, let's bring in, you know, Lieutenant so-and-so, or let's bring in our guy that works security for us. Let's talk to him about what we need. Bring in somebody that's got, you should have a say, because you understand the people that are coming in, you understand your building, but bring in some experts to really help you round it out. Some of you already have it already set. Outside perimeter, watch where you park, make sure there's good lighting. Hopefully none of us are leaving really when it's dark or too dark. You may as an administrator some days. So, all right, inside security real quick, alarm systems, fire protection, signs, emergency lighting. You should have a separate area to handle money. I know before everybody goes, not me, my cash drawer's right there. There's not a lot that you have that you're going to have control with. We're talking best case scenarios here. I mean, if you were going to make a perfect plan, this would be what you're looking for. So it's not bad to strive for that. Personal safety is addressed in the building security as well. We clearly mark all entrances and exits. For some of you, there's just one front door. That's also the exit door. And just, you know what, that's how it works sometimes. Weapon screening, we're going to just kind of skip over that. Let me say this, that needs to be handled by law enforcement. It is a labor-intensive process, And if you have the budget for it, I bet you're already doing it. So we didn't have it in commerce. I mean, it's just not budget friendly for us small departments. It's really not. All right. Duress alarm. I think this is where I'm going to stop right here. Is I want to discuss the duress alarm. Who here has a duress alarm? Who here has an emergency? I want hands high so I can see the difference. Okay, so you do. All right, who doesn't have them? The rest of you, right? That's a mistake. You need to be asking for them. They're very inexpensive to put in the nature of costs. All right? You want a silent alarm. I always found it to be it's not a good idea to let them know you hit the alarm. All the bells and whistles tend to elevate any type of issue that's going on. And this to me would be probably, if you're looking at technology to help keep you safe, for me this is going to be the number one thing. I want an emergency alarm. And it may just go straight to dispatch. But you want to test it monthly if you've got them. Or at least, let's say this, if you've got them, test them every 6 months. The good rule of thumb is, let the police department know before you test it, right? Okay. Because you don't want like 9 guys coming running in. Listen, I'm telling you right now, believe me, I have been there when somebody tested it and didn't tell anybody they were testing it. So. Well, and that's not necessarily a horrible deal, because if you went, yes, you can come in and we can schedule a court appearance, she'll know something's wrong, right? And if you don't answer, something's obviously wrong. So, all right, so does anybody have any questions? Obviously, it wasn't mind-boggling information, right? But it was mostly common sense. I mean, we don't often stop to think about that. You are experts in this field anyway. Why? Because you deal with hundreds of people that come into your court, thousands a year, 10,000s depending on where you work. So you are the expert. You take control of your office. You're polite and professional. You're customer friendly, right? But when it comes time to take control, that's when it's time to take control. You use your brain. You follow some of the effective communication guidelines, which none of it was a surprise, but really that handles all level of issues. The more you practice that, the better you get. And I can now swear off on you that you're all really well trained on court security issues. Does anybody have any questions? I'm waiting for one in particular. There's always usually one that come in when we start talking about court security and issues. Anybody have any questions? Because everybody's hungry. I know my stomach's like, feed me. All right, no questions. Okay, absolutely. I love comments.
And you were talking about that you have one. Last month, or the month before, there was an article in the Recorder. I don't know if you all get that. But it talks about the importance of the glass window, not only for the personnel, but because of the amount of money that we deal with.
Yeah.
So you might forward that to your
manager. You know what? And hey, I'm all for being customer friendly.
On that glass stuff like that, how many days do you have a work company with boxes?
Yeah.
Yeah. The glass we put glass up. We took security first, put glass up for security reasons.
I believe that. It's a great barrier. Yeah, because you can't Lysol everybody that comes in your office, and I know sometimes you want to. Trust me. Well, if you already have the glass, first of all, it doesn't even have to be bulletproof glass. Just the thick glass gives that impression. You want to fight the... If somebody wants to take that out, there's plenty of articles that show that it's a good idea to keep because of different... I haven't heard about it from that angle, but that's just another angle that would be great.
It's an angle I use to justify.
Let me address one other thing since nobody asked the question, and usually like the very first question I get because we're talking about incidents that happen. Let me throw this out. Keep this in mind. There are no rules with an active shooter issue. Does everybody know what an active shooter is? That's where the guy just comes in the front door and he's doing this as he's walking through and he's aiming at anybody. There are no rules in an active shooter situation, then run like hell. Okay? All right? And the reason that is because that is not somebody that you can engage like you can an angry person that's starting to come out of, starting to go nuts on you. You can engage that person and talk, okay? And even if you buy yourself an extra 2 minutes, that's the extra 2 minutes. But somebody that's coming in and doing this, there's no way to engage that person unless you have a sidearm. And so they're usually that's one of the first questions that we get. I get after this course is, well, how do you handle that? Well, you don't. The obligation there is, there's not one because I'm coming, don't worry. But the obligation is that there's no way to deal with that person other than to engage them with the type of behavior that they're engaged in. And so it's get out. It's get out. You're going to... The only time that you should engage that type of person is if you have no other hope and then there's no other option. A good example is at a bank, there has been a documented case where some robbers came in and lined up the bank clerks. And, of course, y'all are told, just don't do anything, do what they want. And the robbers started going down the line, shooting the bank clerks. So the cops stormed in, but what they asked was, they asked the clerks, why didn't you stand up? Well, we've always been told not to do anything. But you see, at that point, there's nothing to do but to fight. If their total intent is to harm you like that, then... But no, if you can go the other way, you can go the other way. And that's what I would suggest. I mean, unless you're... If you're packing, then you don't even tell them to drop the weapon. You just pound them. So, you had a question. I'm going to defer that to you guys. That anytime they have an incident in court, they're supposed to fill out that form. But I don't work.
But it gives the charts and stuff. I mean, as far as when the incidents occurred, and the majority is in municipal courts.
The reason that is.
Well, it would be good for these people that are trying to fight to get some security.
Yes. If you, what she said, if you look at the numbers of the type of incidents that occur in the courts, the majority are happening in the municipal courts. But that has nothing to do with, that's only because we deal with so many. So, you know, it's like, it's just because you're dealing with, you know, 500,000 people a year. Well, you're going to have incidents. You're going to have more than you are, say, a county court of law who doesn't see as many people as we see in the municipal level. So it's raw numbers. It's like looking at the counties with alcohol fatalities. Austin, Dallas, Houston, they always have more. Why? Because you got a couple of million people, so you're going to have, you know, it's a volume. The question is volume.
Right. Are you going to be around to, I know there'll be some other questions. Are you going to be here after lunch?
Yes. Are we doing lunch here?
We're doing lunch.
I will be there at lunch, too.
Okay. All right. Well, so if you didn't get your question answered or you want to follow up with Ray, we can catch him at lunch. Let me make a couple of announcements. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, you don't have to leave.
She's running me off.
No, I don't leave till lunch.
If I leave now, I can actually beat like 50 people in the lunch line. So.
All right. Well, thank you, Ray. Thanks very much. We're on our way to lunch. Lunch is at the same place where we had breakfast. We're going to be going into breakouts this afternoon, so you can leave your books where they are, but somebody may be sitting there when you come back. The breakout classes are on the door, so look at the respective doors and you'll find out where you're supposed to go. I have some sad news, relatively speaking. Susan Carver from Brownsboro. Anybody know her? She's a judge. She won the bracelet. Yay! Yeah. Last announcement, I think San Angelo pointed out that our OCA statistics that we've got in your course books have some cutoff numbers or incorrect numbers, and so we're going to be reprinting those, and we will mail those corrected OCA statistics with your certificates. Let's go to lunch. See you back at 1:00.